You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, where your host is Dr. Janine James, Brother Quojo Robinson, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Cotney. The program is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Email them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. And I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of their programs are archived. Just go to the website, www.timeforanawakening.com, use the search portal, and put in the keyword, elders.
Beneath thy hand, may we forever. We're poor. Ashe.
Ashe.
We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We poor to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Porto, Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Mr. Robson?
What is the Communist Party? What do you mean by that?
Are you now a member of the Communist Party?
Would you like
Party?
To come to the ballot box when I vote and take out the ballot and see?
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully suggest the witness be directed to answer the question.
You are directed to answer the question.
I invoke the Fifth Amendment and forget it.
I respectfully suggest the witness be directed to answer the question whether, if he gave us a truthful answer, he would be supplying information which might be used against him in a criminal proceeding.
You are directed to answer,
Gentlemen,
Mr. Rogan.
In the first place, wherever I have been in the world, the first to die in the struggle against fascism were the communists. I laid many wreaths upon the graves of communists. That is not criminal. Chief Justice Warren has been very clear that the Fifth Amendment does not have anything to do with the inference of criminality, and I invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Have you ever been known under the name of John Thomas?
Oh, please, does somebody here want me to put up a perjury someplace? John Thomas, my name is Paul Robeson, and anything I have to say, I have said in public all over the world, and that is why I'm here today.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that you direct the witness to answer the question he's making.
I ask you to affirm or deny the fact that your Communist Party name was John Thomas.
I invoke the Fifth Amendment. This is really ridiculous.
The witness talks very loud when he makes a speech, but when he invokes the Fifth Amendment, I can't hear him.
I have medals for diction. I can talk plenty loud.
Will you talk a little louder?
I invoke the Fifth Amendment loudly.
Sir, who are Mr. and Mrs. Vladimir
Nikiev? I invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Do you know a Manning Johnson?
I invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Do you know Gregory Kifetz?
I invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Do you know a Max Juergen?
I invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Max Juergen.
Why don't you have these people here to be cross-examined? Could I ask whether this is legal?
This is not only legal, but usual. By unanimous vote, this committee has been instructed to perform this very distasteful task.
To whom am I talking?
You're speaking to the chairman of the committee.
Mr. Walter?
Yes.
The Pennsylvania Walter?
That is right.
Representative of the steel workers?
That is right.
And the coal mining workers?
That is right.
Not United States Steel, by any chance. A great patriot.
That is right.
You are the author of the bills that are going to keep all kinds of decent people out of the country.
No, only your kind.
Colored people like myself. And you would let in the Teutonic Anglo-Saxon stock.
We are trying to make it easier to get rid of your kind, too.
You don't want any colored people to come in. Could I be allowed to read from my statement?
Will you just tell this committee, please, while under oath, Mr. Robeson, the communists who participated in the preparation of that statement?
Oh, please. The reason I'm here today, from the mouth of the State Department itself, is I should not be allowed to travel because I have struggled for the independence of the colonial peoples of Africa. The other reason I'm here today, again, from the State Department and from the record of the Court of Appeals, is that when I am abroad, I speak out against injustices against the Negro people in this land. That is why I'm here. I'm not being tried for whether I'm a communist. I'm being tried for fighting for the rights of my people, who are still second-class citizens in this country, in this United States of America. My mother was born in your state, and my mother was a Quaker. My ancestors, in the time of Washington, baked bread for George Washington's troops when they crossed the Delaware. My father was a slave. I stand here struggling for the rights of my people to be full citizens in this country. And we are not. We are not in Mississippi. We are not in Montgomery, Alabama. We are not in Washington. We are nowhere. And that is why I am here today. You want to shut up every Negro who has the courage to stand up and fight for the rights of his people, for the rights of workers. And I have been on many a picket line for the steel workers, too. And that is why I'm here today.
Would you tell us whether or not you know Thomas W. Young?
I invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Thomas W. Young is a Negro president of the Guide Publishing Company. I'd like to read you his testimony, quote, Paul Robeson has no moral right to place in jeopardy the welfare of the American Negro to advance a foreign cause. In the eyes of the Negro people, this false prophet is unfaithful to their country, and they repudiate him, close quote. Do you know the man that said that?
I invoke the Fifth Amendment now. Can I read my statement? It is a sad and bitter comment.
While you were in Paris in 1949, Mr. Robeson, did you tell an audience the American Negro would never go to war against the Soviet government?
May I say that is slightly out of context. May I explain to you what I did say? I remember the speech very well. 2,000 students who came from populations that would range to 600 or 700 million people asked me to say in their name that they did not want war. No part of my speech in Paris says 15 million American Negroes would do anything.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414.
Welcome. This is Dr. Janine James, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and I am delighted to be with you here today. We have some exciting conversation that we're looking forward to. My co-host today will be Sister Asarta Ankti. And Sister Afua Maab will be joining us a little later. And we are just so happy about being here today with you. We have an exciting guest here with us, Dr. Sir Grice, who has been with us before. And there's certainly some new information that we hope that he will be able to lead us in and answer our questions about so much that's been circulating regarding vaccines, boosters, and variants. But we're going to allow Sister Asarta Ankti to give us the purpose of the Sankofa Council.
Yes, good evening, Dr. James and the audience. Sankofa Council purpose is to use African principles of unity and cooperation to create a healing environment for our community. And I think that we'll be exercising that very well with this evening's topic. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Sister. And our topic, vaccines, boosters, and variants, we are approaching what will be the third year dealing with the realities of COVID-19 virus. We have sadly lost too many of us. Yes, we have had a slow start. We have received some confusing messages from those we expect to know. And we have learned that the healthcare system has been biased, as we are more likely to die when infected. We must get better informed, and we can. And this is our effort here today, to allow us to perhaps understand it in ways that we have not understood it, such that we are losing in the fight. And we've got to do better. Dr. Sir Grice is back, and he has that info that we need to know about what has been developed to halt this virus. But we're going to go to our ancestral profile. And I have to say, I feel I'm trying to fill the shoes of our sister Dee Dee Conley, because I found myself thinking, as Sister Dee Dee would, with such enthusiasm about the subject. And we started our program with music from our ancestor that we're focusing on, Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson was an incredible man. I tell you, incredible. Especially when I think about the time period that he lived and his varied interest. And so I know I won't be doing credit because the volumes of information about him is so extensive. And I encourage you to not be limited in what we're able to provide here today and allow some time to study in greater detail Paul Robeson. And I find every time I read about him, I think about things that have happened and people have said since then, but that he is the man who really just epitomizes the Renaissance man, the person who just has been so interested in so many topics. And so I'm just going to try to give you a little bit, and it doesn't do him credit, but I want to get us started in thinking about this incredible person. Paul Leroy Robeson was such a dynamic man, and he demonstrated his proficiency in so many areas during a time when achieving just one of those interests, one of those fields, would have at the time been impossible, as well as now. He was born on April 9th, 1898, and he was an American bass baritone, which we heard a sample of that in the opening song. And he was a concert artist, a lawyer, a stage and film actor, an athlete, and an activist who became famous both for his cultural accomplishments and for his political stances. In 1915, Robeson won an academic scholarship to Rutgers College. While at Rutgers, he was twice named a consensus All-American in football and was the class valedictorian, in 1918 at Rutgers. He received a law degree from Columbia Law School while playing at the National Football League. Now, Brother Charles, Brother Quojo, you talk about your challenges in law school, but were you playing at the same time that you were in law school with the National Football League? This boy was bad. After graduation, he became a figure in the Harlem Renaissance with performances in The Emperor Jones and All God's Chillin' Got Wings. Robeson's political activities began with his involvement with unemployed workers and anti-imperialistic students in Britain, and it continued with his support for the Republican cause during the Spanish Civil War and his involvement in the Council of African Affairs. After returning to the United States in 1939, Robeson supported the American and Allied war efforts during World War II. However, his history of supporting civil rights causes and Soviet policies brought scrutiny from the FBI, and that certainly led to that testimony which we saw, which we listened to earlier, where he was being interrogated. So he has been an incredible person as a performer But he was also tremendous as it relates to his work as an activist and bringing our attention to some very, very, very relevant topics. I'm going to close on Paul Robeson, who died in 1965. But there's just so much more to say about him. But I've got to move on to what our topic is, the vaccines, boosters, and variants. And we have and here with us today, Dr. Sir Grice. Dr. Sir Grice, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm going to allow you to take over from here in terms of where you left us and where we are now in that second year. And there still are a lot of questions circulating. There's still a lot of things that I'm hearing from people who are not understanding. We're seeing people infected. We are seeing folks dying. It has been a very sad time as we look at the people that we've lost. Even the people who we haven't lost, but who've been ill, not expecting to be ill. And in fact, many people who are really asking a lot of questions about the fact that they have done what was asked of them, they've gotten vaccinated, and they still had COVID. And some of them have died and still had received vaccinations. So, Dr. Grice, what do you think's going on, and what is it that we need to know about what's going on?
Well, that's a very, very, very broad question, but it highlights the number one focus of the idea of what we are doing currently as healthcare providers is the practice of medicine. We are not God. We are not even on that level. And so we are still in the mix of trying to understand what's going on as a profession, as providers. With that being said, there have been some phenomenal growth strides within the arena of COVID, specifically with new medications that are coming out that will help potentially help decrease the longevity of the virus or the potential for hospitalization and death of the virus. And I'll get into that a little bit later after we expound on some other topics. But we still, as a culture, are dying at a higher rate than our white counterparts, 2-to-1. We are being hospitalized at a higher rate at almost 2.6-to-1. And pretty much anybody of color outside of our Asian counterparts are experiencing similar demographics. Indigenous Americans, Native Americans are having it the worst. We and Latin Americans are next in those criteria, and then whites followed by Asians who are having a little lesser impact by the virus directly. Of course, that being said, because of the financial systems that we are part of, the caste system and systemic racism that is highly apparent within our society, resources are not distributed at the same rate, similar to finances, education. Those systemic racism pieces hold a big variance of where we sit right now with the disease. When it comes to access to care, when it comes to financial literacy and responsibility, when it comes to historical trust of the system, There's a lot of issues that the black community has to deal with that our white counterparts are not fond of, familiar with, or completely understanding of. So those are our initial blueprints that we still sit on. With the initial question that was presented, vaccines, boosters, and variants, I'll break down each of the three. The first one is the vaccine, which we had to talk about a couple months ago, where right now there are three vaccines that have emergency criteria from the FDA that has allowed them to be used in America. That's our Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and Moderna. Two of those vaccines are mRNA vaccines. mRNA just means that it works with our DNA to create a precursor of what the genetic code of COVID looks like, and it allows our body's immune system to build immunity to that COVID genetic code, and hopefully allows our bodies to build enough immunity through antibodies to kill off the virus once it enters into our body's system. The other vaccines, and there's some other ones that are coming out, are protein-based, where they actually inject a protein that has the same markers of the COVID virus. Those proteins then are attacked by our immune system, so they don't directly bind to our genetic system, but they're identified by our immune system, and the same response is created to build up immunity with antibodies. Boosters, on the other hand, are another reiteration of the same vaccine. So it's the same vaccine that you were initially given, but we are giving boosters because it's been identified that the COVID virus can nullify our immune system's antibodies depending on a person's individual health and immunity between 6 and 9 months. And so a lot of the vaccines are being asked for people to get boosters. And that's why you have a 2 or 3 shot regimen right now currently for the COVID virus. The final part are variants. So everything on Earth was made to grow, to live, to prosper, and viruses are the same. Their objective is survival. And so mutations, which are changes in a specific living creature's genetic code to adapt to their environment, are made to continue thriving in their survival. So the COVID virus that we've dealt with, we've had the Delta, which is the second application, and now you're starting to see news on the Omicron, which is being prevalent in South Africa and that country at the moment. This is the virus's mechanism of growth to try to adapt to changes that are being presented within its own personal survival. So that's to address each of the three title questions as we go. Anything you want me to address before I get in a little deeper about opportunities for treatment or?
Yes. I want to know, and many people have said their fear of the vaccination, one of them, is that they are being injected with small amounts of COVID virus, and it is through the introduction of this COVID virus into our bodies, giving it to us, that they are afraid of. So could you speak to that? I'm sure you've heard people talk about something like that.
Yes, I've heard a lot of interesting things. to be honest, this is one of the lowest ones that I've heard. But the definition of a of any vaccine is taking a small process of it and utilizing whatever that is to put into the system, into your human system, at a reasonable amount so that immune response can be developed. The initial beginning of the vaccines came from an African-American gentleman, and I can't remember the exact specifics, but it was something that was brought over from Africa years ago, and he interacted with someone in Northeastern America and identified the idea of utilizing a small portion of like smallpox or something, a virus, in enough of a form where it could be utilized for the body to build its own self-immunity. So the exact COVID virus we're not really giving in these vaccines. The data that was necessary, and this is why it was very important for us to acquire a lot of data from different countries, is when the COVID virus was identified, what was identified was its genetic platform. Our genetic code was broken down around 2000 or so by Francis Collins and Watson years ago, about 2001, 2002. And this monumental find is that they took the entire human genome, about a billion or so base pairs, and identified what it looks like. And they made it public and didn't make it private, so you don't have to pay to see what someone's genetic code can look like. And that genetic code is made up of DNA splices, but their codes come in three identified amino acid pairs. When people look at stuff, they'll see ATCG and stuff like that in their DNA. But those three codes, three of those amino acids, ATG or CTG or ATT or any of those combinations, when combined, makes up your genetic makeup, your genetic makeup of a specific topic. And that is what has been identified for our COVID. Now, I don't know what the genetic blueprint for COVID is. I haven't done any research into that. But that is the makeup that scientists have utilized to mimic what the COVID genome will look like. So scientists took that membrane of what the makeup is, the blueprint of that diagram of the genetic code, and then replicated it in the lab and made it safe enough for the human body to be able to absorb it safely with the correct proteins and the binders that could be injected into the system. Then once they did that, they made it into multiple mechanisms, either a mechanism where it could bind into our own DNA supplement to look like COVID, which will help the system identify that this is a not normal human cell, but this is a stranger, an enemy cell, produce the necessary markers on top of the cell so the human immune system can interact. So, yes, you are, quote, unquote, receiving COVID, but you're receiving what COVID's genetic makeup would be, and you're receiving it in a dose that is safe enough for the majority of the human population. Now, in most cases, when we do clinical trials, we're doing those clinical trials on healthy humans. So it's always something that we got to realize, that those humans or those participants are identified to be healthy, whatever that definition to some could be. But those are healthy humans. So it's very difficult to get grade A analysis on sick humans. But the blessing with the COVID vaccines that we've done with, we've had over 400 or 500 million people vaccinated globally. And the data that we've gotten from these numbers has been very productive to be able to show the opportunity of decreased hospitalization, decreased death by getting vaccinated.
Okay, well, thank you. This is, as I expected, pretty complex subject, and it's very difficult. As you pointed out, we are human, and we're trying to address an issue based upon the differences of so many individuals to try to create that vaccination that's going to do everything is extremely challenging when the people that you're giving it to are all so very different. And I think that's something for us to keep in mind. And I've often thought that perhaps this booster is necessary because we haven't had the sufficient time. Had we had more time, we may have increased the dosage in the first place, or we may have created it in such a way that a booster may not have been needed. Do you have some thoughts about that?
I agree with you 100%, but to be realistic, there is way too much politics in American healthcare. So to be able to do the practice of care properly, you would need, like you say, more time to identify what that max dose would be. But in all cases, in most healthcare, especially in pharmacy, our number one go-to is start as low as possible and go as slow as possible to make sure you decrease any level of harm. The one thing you don't want in a highly politicized environment is for a vaccine to come out, which many people are already fearful of, where we moved it from being a healthcare issue to being a political issue, is for this vaccine to come out and cause more harm than good, even though it's the source of good. And so we would love to say, yes, we could have did it right the first time, but we don't live in the society where the first time is allowed to be done well, as we should have. And that's the pivot to it. You know, we just don't have that opportunity to do things right the first time, because whatever that first product is, if it is not first off safe, then the chance for a second chance don't exist. So the holistic thought to being able to, you know, do it right and properly do it would be great. But secondly, we don't have enough trust and honesty amongst all of us. We don't live in a just America. So we couldn't do it right either. I mean, you're not going to get – we represent 12% of the United States. There's definitely no proof at the initial trials that there was 12% black representation. There definitely wasn't 14% Latino representation or Asian or, if any, Native American representation. So if the powers that be who are funding the dollars aren't utilizing all the resources to get all the people to get representation for, and let's be honest on the other side, the majority of us don't trust enough to allow ourselves to be the guinea pigs to any of these healthcare options in the preliminaries because of topics that have, I can guarantee, been discussed on this topic stream before, of the Tuskegee issue and how we were experimental tools for surgery and other things. So there's too much of a history of how we, especially as black people, have been misused, mistreated, and manipulated throughout the healthcare ranks. So in a perfect world, yes, it would be great for that to happen. But systemically, sadly, I don't think the proper lanes are in place yet for that to operate.
So what I'm hearing you say is that if we are not participating in the trials, being the guinea pig, then it makes it more difficult to know what would be the best recipe, so to speak, for these various groups that you describe. We're trying to apply our experience with one group of people and trying to fit it for another group of people, and we may be missing some valuable information by the absence of representatives of those various groups.
Exactly.
Well, that's some food for thought as we get ready to discuss this further. Our number here to ask questions or comments is 215-490-9832. We also have an email address, Sankofa Council, MKE@gmail.com. And Sister Afua, I see, is here with us at this time. Sister Afua, thank you for being here.
Peace. Blessings to you both. Thank you for having me to share this time with you.
And Sister Afua, can you tell us some our sponsor announcement?
Yes, I can. And if you allow me to share, our sponsor is EDOC Advice, a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. Are you wanting more options than you feel you're getting? Let us help you solve these problems. Go to our website and ask your questions. Our expert professionals will help you obtain the help you need that makes sense to you at www.edocadvic.com. That's www.edocadvice.com.
Thank you so much, Sister Afua, for that information. I see that we have some people who have joined us, and we're going to go to see if they want to ask some questions of Dr. Grice before we move to our top of the hour, which is fast approaching. 414-334-414-334. Do you have a question or comment for us? 414-414-334.
Oh, is that me?
Yes.
Hello, Dr. James. This is Karen Nelson calling in from Milwaukee. I have really enjoyed the program so far. I was hoping my husband would be able to join me on the same call, but he may have called in separately. So we are just enjoying the information, very useful information. I am now, too, in the healthcare field, in the mental health care field, and with my current employer. And so this is vital information to get out to our BIPOC communities. And so I just want to applaud you for inviting us, and thank you again for inviting us into the call.
Thank you so much, Sister Karen, and coming on with us. We have...
You're welcome.
414-339. 414-339. Do you
have him? Hello, Dr. James and panel. This is Stanford Nelson.
All right.
Speaking from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm so honored to be a part of this discussion because there's so much great information that we get to absorb being African Americans in this world, and we're getting straight talk, and that's what we need is straight talk, so we can put away the misnomers and all the lies and everything else to confuse people. And we're living in a world where lies are the truth and the truth is a lie, but we got to overcome all of that to deal with the facts.
Now, Mr. Nelson, Mrs. Nelson, have you had your vaccination yet?
Yes.
Three times, yes.
Exactly.
Have you had your booster?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. We sure have.
And the boosted, yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Now,
I've got a couple of friends that needs the booster, and we checked around. And one of the pharmacies that he was affiliated with was giving him dates 2 weeks around. So I called 211 and got connected with the place over on 6th Street, 2460, Matt Whittle's organization.
Oh, yes. The neighborhood house.
Yeah, went to the neighborhood house. And they have a nurse that comes in on Tuesdays and Fridays from 10 until 2 that will administer the vaccine. So I got them over there yesterday, but however, the nurse called in sick, but we're going to be scheduled to go back on Tuesday to make sure he gets his booster as well.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I know that I'm finding, though, that people are having a little difficulty. It's not quite as easy as people make it seem.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk more about that shortly. But I'm not impressed with the system as it's been structured. I don't think such great thought has been put into how to best deliver what it is that we need. And, when we find a challenge, for example, we go someplace and we want to get tested and the people tell us, well, what are all your symptoms? And, okay, I don't think you need to have a test, or it's not time to get the booster yet. It should be 6 months, and you're at 5 months. So people just say, well, good, I didn't want to get stuck anyway.
Right.
And so that they use that as a good excuse to move on. And then we hear the stories of people saying, well, I was told not to get the booster, and now I'm sick, or or we lose some of those people. So I'm not really happy with these kinds of experiences that people are having. And we're going to, I hope we'll, Dr. Grice will talk more with us about what can we do to build up our own immune system to serve, to help, to fight in the event that we are infected, even when we've made all of our efforts. What else can we do? So we're at the top of the hour, and we'll be back shortly.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, where your host is Dr. Janine James, Brother Quojo Robinson, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. The program is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Email them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. And I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of their programs are archived. Just go to the website, www.timeforanawakening.com, use the search portal, and put in the keyword, elders.
Welcome back. We are here, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and we are visiting with our guest, Dr. Sir Grice, and we're talking about vaccines, boosters, and variants. And please give us a call at 215-490-9832. And I see that we have someone here at number 414-405-415-405. Do you have a question, a comment for us? Okay, maybe we'll come back to you.
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Hi. Okay. I wanted to ask, is it okay if, okay, for instance, I had the J&J, okay, vaccine, and they keep saying that it's okay to take the either the Pfizer for a booster or either the Moderna. So I just wanted to ask which one would be the best booster for me to take.
Dr. Grice?
Whatever you are available to get, to be honest.
Okay, so it really doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference. They're all a level of efficacy that's going to get you what you need. And at this point, they are all some form of COVID genetic variant that your body will still be able to build immunity to long term.
Oh, okay. All right.
On that subject, I mentioned earlier about people finding challenges to them coming in at 6 months after the last shot. There's some who've wanted to come at 4, 5 months. Can you speak to what? Why is there some discrepancy in that? Why are we not having a little more flexibility related to that issue?
This is, we still got to realize that COVID has impacted the healthcare system in a way that is very new. There is no algorithm in place. So there is no blueprint to what this should have been like. And because of that, there's so much infrastructure that did not exist that we're still working through as health systems. The second part to that is healthcare in general is completely stressed, and they're stretched extremely thin. And even though all of us in healthcare should be servants and wanting to get the best outcomes for our patients, in this new world where we're so thin, depending on the day and the opportunity, the task of giving a COVID vaccine seems more of a burden than a healthcare outreach outcome. And that can happen in some situations. The third point to add to this is that we have limited supplies on a lot of these topics. So the same way when you're a part of an underserved environment, and depending on what the political affiliation is for the state that you reside in, those in political power dictate where those supplies are going to go. And similar to the same fact that if there's none of us at the table, there's no one to speak for our concerns. If there's no one in that room, then some of these areas can get completely forgotten about when it comes to delegating resources. That's why people say it's so important to talk about the census and topics of that fashion and voting and all type of things, because those long-term impacts are there for you. A good example is the vaccines that have been created, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, though very productive, their day-to-day operational utilization was not. So you had to have them stored in super cold freezers, which not everybody can afford to have or possess. Once the vial was thawed out, the life expectancy for that vaccine was very short. You only got a maximum of 12 hours for it. So if you opened up a vial and you didn't have people to utilize it, you had to waste a lot of that vaccine. A lot of places were trying to initially schedule people to get in so we could schedule supplies. Some places are starting to use other resources where if somebody comes in as a walk-in or someone who might be close to needing a booster, we offer them the option of getting one from supply that we might not have been able to use as scheduled to not waste as much as we have. And then other places are just finding it very difficult to get supply in general because of a lack of utilization or redistribution to certain areas. So if you get a supply from the state or the federal government and they divvy out, say, 3,000 shots to Milwaukee Health Services. If Milwaukee Health Services does not utilize those 3,000 shots in X amount of time, they might decide to move those shots to a place where there's a higher utilization rate so they can decrease the amount of waste that might potentially be brought about because these vaccines aren't being utilized. Similar to vaccines, you might be hearing about these new treatment form called monoclonal antibodies. There are a couple new medications that are present right now that are coming to be available with some government agreements upon safety, but they're in very short and limited supply. So there's very strict utilization tools, as in you can only use them for patients who are presenting with COVID, but we can't use it for prophylaxis or for preventative treatment just yet. That being said, living in lower income environments, being of an underserved and underinsured group of people, these supplies will be even more limited for those patient populations. So there are a couple things that are definitely in play. It definitely could be improved upon. There are a lot of people who are working to work to improve that. And the best thing is really to find healthcare providers that you trust so you can reach out to them to see what's the most efficient way to get access to those supplies that are currently available.
Thank you, Dr. Grice, for that response. I see we have a call from 414-364. Do you have a question or comment for us? Okay, 414-554. 414-554. All right. Well, I can tell you about some of the experience that I've had in the last couple of weeks and really had me thinking about what's happening to my brothers and sisters. I was in Chicago and I went for my booster. I didn't have any difficulty with getting that, but I asked the question about getting tested for COVID. And I really, really felt like I was getting the runaround. And I knew that I would find a way to get tested. I would. But I thought about so many of the people who were using this same clinic, a federally qualified health center in Chicago. And I was given an appointment to be tested. I was told I'd have to speak to a provider before I could be tested. And for me to speak to a provider, I was given an appointment 14 days later. Now, in my mind, I could have been positive, and I have 14 days that I am spreading the virus to someone else. Now, that to me was dumb. And unfortunately, in the 40 years that I've been in healthcare, we have not come up with a management plan for working with different groups of people. But I can certainly tell you my experience with working with Black patients, you better deal with them when they're there. You don't send them home and tell them to come back, because it took all of their courage to come in the first place. They had to do extraordinary things to get there in the first place. So to tell them, come back, you may not see them back. And when they're back, they're sick or they're dead. 14 days that I had to come back. And I came back in 14 days. Now, I had been tested and found out that I was negative. But I have two friends who I've been around, and they have had their vaccinations and felt that they were safe. And they were both positive to COVID. High risk folks. So it let me know that you can get infected much easier than you thought you could. And to have people turn you away, I think, is dumb. Especially when the patient, the person comes to a healthcare facility, they expect that people are going to give them the right answer instead of testing them. And then when I asked the question about why you're not testing them, they said, well, only the providers can test the patients, and we don't want to pull them away from another patient to have them test them. But they have medical assistants who are giving the vaccination, which is more invasive procedure than is required to do a test. And in fact, in many settings, you do your own collection of the specimen, your own nasal swab. So why couldn't that happen in that healthcare clinic instead of telling patients, no, we're not testing. No, you don't need it. But then we've got people who are getting infected. They're passing it. They don't know that they're infected. And that's something I would like you to talk about, Dr. Grice, about people being positive and are asymptomatic. Because I think we have the perception, unless the person's coughing on us and looking sick, they aren't infectious to us. But this does not go along with what's happening in reality. So I wish you would talk about that, Dr. Grice.
You presented three very unique topics that I will try to address. I will get on my manager hat for the first part. I will be on my political activist part for the second part, and then I will be on my clinician part on the third part. The first part you addressed was the poor management of COVID tests. Step one, COVID has presented one of the greatest employee shortages in our history, meaning that we have a very, very small pool of eligible employees. Secondly, the employees that we do currently have are already overworked. And thirdly, to add tasks to an employee grouping would require us to advance payment structures, which is not already following up, especially with dealing with federally qualified health centers where the financial supply is very, very limited for the care that is being asked of them. The second part is because of that, the costs, the employee shortages, and all those ideas, instead of, like normal people used to do, tell the truth and say, we don't have the people, we can't do this right now. We like to pull people on a string for the opportunity of future business. So sadly, healthcare is not being utilized in these moments. We're utilizing business practices, which in most cases are piss poor when dealing with healthcare. Those business practices are developed solely off of our capitalistic society, in a society that obviously is driven by the white populace, specifically white men, the good old boys crew, where the sole outcome is profit. We don't care about health outcomes, we care about profit. And so instead of being blunt and honest and telling the truth that we don't have the people to do it, we don't have the tests to do it successfully, we waste more energy identifying a timeline to nullify the need for a test than just telling the truth. So you see, they told you to come back in 14 days, which is long enough time for if you are positive to no longer be positive, which in a healthcare situation is sadly very sickening that they even told you that. But that's a story here, no there. The second part that you put in there is, like you say, the systemic racism of it all. And here that we had the Nelsons on and talking about mental health, we do not address the black tax, the minority tax, those topics in a lot of situations when dealing in healthcare. In practice, we go off of an algorithm of finding the issue, solving the issue, but we do not put the patient holistically in that algorithm. There is no algorithm that starts with African-American woman, 66, who might pass for white or something, or may have a high level of obesity. We don't look at that. We just look at patient symptoms. Because we don't look at the whole person, we don't ask specific questions. A, federally qualified health system. Usually we're dealing with underinsured, no insurance individuals. Most of that patient population is eligible for Medicaid. And for depending on your state, eligibility for Medicaid means you have to earn less than $11,000 a year, which is pretty much beneath poor. So first question should be asked is, how did you get here? Were you chopped off? Were you picked up? Did somebody Uber you? Did you take the bus? All those topics are important because that then identifies how easy will it be for you to get back. That question isn't identified. Secondly, are we dealing with somebody's mental health? As in, are you comfortable? Do you trust this environment? What do you know about healthcare? Because in an environment where you're already nervous to be there or terrified to be there, to have someone speak to you about topics that you have no understanding of, it can make you extremely embarrassed and nervous, which then whatever they say, you take with a grain of salt, which takes away the importance of asking questions in healthcare, which everybody needs to do about your own personal health. So that really needs to be something that is focused in on, especially with individual practitioners, identifying the importance of their value and their voice with the patient that they're utilizing. The third thing you were talking about was the idea of, forgive me, my brain just had a subtle blank, about talking about, incubation time and how do we know somebody's asymptomatic and caring? So at this point in time, you can almost guarantee that all of us have probably carried COVID at one time or another, and we're probably all currently carriers of it at this time. Just if you left your house and went to the grocery store or got on a – if you've been around enough people, you have probably been a carrier of it. The blessing of, depending on your health care and your status, will let you know what those symptoms might look like. The hard part about this entire topic is getting tested. Those tests can be true or false. And I don't know what the current evidence is right now, but there is no 100% guarantee that even being tested will provide a true positive result. So usually there's a level of error. Most error we say in science is 5%, give or take. So there's a 5% chance that the positive you receive is actually a negative, and there's a 5% chance that the negative you receive is actually a positive. That doesn't incorporate being able to have someone who can do the test properly. So anybody who's gotten a COVID test, it feels extremely awkward if you do the nasal test where they're going into your nasal cavity and almost seem like they're sticking something off to your brain. If you don't get high enough into the nasal cavity, you're not going to acquire enough of the material to actually identify if the results are true or false, which adds more chance for error to those results. So depending on the practice site, they might find more value in just treating the urgently symptomatic patient than the acquiring asymptomatic patient. The worry and fear about being asymptomatic or someone who presents with no symptoms but can be a carrier is that at any given moment, we could all be that individual. That's why a lot of places are trying to focus in on having people walk around with a face covering, with a mask, so you can decrease the chances of giving anything to another individual. That is just community in its best form, because it's sacrificing your comfort to protect those who you have no idea what their current status is or may be. That's why I still tell everybody the number one focus is to get vaccinated, because it allows you to produce your own level of immunity to the situation and decrease your chances of reaching those high, severe, and hospitalized status. Now, the thing about vaccines that we also don't talk about enough is that if you get vaccinated today, that does not mean you're going to be fully vaccinated tomorrow. There takes a cycle for your body to get that level of immunity, and that's usually 2 weeks. That is usually the time where it takes for your body to acquire enough cells for immunity. Our blood cells have a life cycle. We don't have the same blood that lives today and is always here. Those blood cells have about a 45-day life cycle, similar to our skin. You see that sheds. Our hair sheds. Our body is constantly rejuvenating. That is pretty much how we have our clock. So the genetic, our genome replicates constantly. And as our cells replicate, the DNA cells that we have get smaller and smaller and smaller, which means our immunity gets smaller, our life cycle gets smaller, all those things get smaller. That's how things change as we get older. So depending on your age point also depends on the duration of the time it's going to take to acquire that level of immunity. So that's something that always has to be educated as well when we're talking about the importance of vaccines, but how people can say they got vaccinated yesterday and they end up passing away from COVID a couple of days later or something to that fashion, or so, because their body never had an opportunity to acquire enough of the immunity necessary to get full protection.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, there's are people who may actually be infected at the time that they got the vaccination. And those individuals could easily become ill, not because they got the vaccination, but they were infected before the vaccination. And it wasn't detected or wasn't tested for, because that is not a criteria for doing the vaccination, that you have a test to see if you are positive. And those individuals, having received the vaccination, would not have sufficient time to build up the immunity when they already are exposed, not only exposed, but infected by that virus.
Yep, that is correct.
You see, and now that's a part that I would think would be important in terms of us gathering the information that we really need to do. I think there's a better job we could have been doing along the way, and to have tested people prior to receiving the vaccination would be helpful to know. And I suspect there's a certain number of folks who were already infected. But I think we've been doing this in the quickest way possible, and we have missed out on the opportunity to learn as much as we could in the process.
Dr. James, I have a question.
Yes, please.
As far as the variants are concerned, we have the Delta variant, and now there's another variant that's come out. I think when the Delta variant came out, the booster also came out. So with the onset of this new variant, may there be a requirement for another booster? If I understand how you say the vaccination actually works, that you give a little bit of the variant in the vaccination, and so you're covered up to that point. That's what I understood.
You are correct. The chances are yes, boosters will continue until we get to a point where there is an acceptable amount of deaths from COVID. And that sounds very sad and sickening, but that's how things function. When you look at if you look at death rates, the stuff that would shock you is the flu kills a whole lot of people and we don't really realize it. Upper respiratory things kill a lot of people and we don't really realize it. We talk about, you know, car accidents and gunshots, but they lower on the map than people realize. So once we get to a point that's acceptable for us in the science community, which no death should be acceptable, but there's just a reality to it, then the amount of boostering will change. But until there's a decent enough grasp on what immunity looks like, then there will probably be boosters going forward. Because, like I said, the most recent research that I've done is that you usually can get levels of antibody buildup for 6 to 9 months. Once those antibodies are gone, and that's the thing about COVID that's so amazing, is that COVID has figured out a way to get rid of the defense system in your body. So they kill off what's killing them and then start replicating again. And so once those antibodies are lost, then you need to get reboosted up so that you can be prepared for that. Similar to if you get a cold or if you get the flu. Some flus, your body's fine. You might just get the sniffles. Other flus, you might get sick and be down for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, because the way that it replicated, your body didn't have enough time to build enough immunity to it. And that's with any sickness that we have. Sometimes you can linger with a cold for 2-3 weeks. You can move, you can do things, but you still got this lingering cough or you got this lingering sniffle. That's because your body still hasn't broken down enough of this bug, this virus, to get you to a point where you're not no longer at a place of being, you know, sick. So I believe there'll probably be a continuance of boosters until we get to a point where the amount of life loss is acceptable, and then we can probably get to a point that Dr. James presented earlier, the idea of increasing the dosage to a variable level where we can present a longer-term immunity, something to, if people are aware of, like, pneumonia or shingles, we now have shingle vaccines that can get people to 35 years of immunity compared to the initial ones who are only about 15. So when we're telling people at the age of 60, 65, get vaccinated, that's because you assume life expectancy was 75. So this one two-shot vaccination would get you to about the end of life expectancy. But now since life expectancy might be increasing, talent and science has improved, now we're getting to the point where we can potentially make those things longer, improve that longevity as science improves, and then hopefully we'll get to a point where, A, we don't need to be vaccinated anymore because our bodies have also gotten to a point where we're there or we've completely gotten rid of COVID, or B, the science is there where we can do something that's going to be able to allow our bodies to have enough antibody support that lasts longer than 6 to 9 months.
Okay, as a quick follow-up to that question, say you get sick after you've gotten the shots, you got everything, and yet you still get sick. Are there medications that is being prescribed to help recovery, to help with recovery?
So right now there's what I was saying earlier, there's some drugs called monoclonal antibodies that are out. There's two that have been passed. One is coming out soon. These are medications that are not used for preventative services but can be used if you are sick. And in most cases, they are done through an IV infusion. Infusion lasts anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the dose that is being prescribed to the patient. A lot of these, similar to the vaccines, are a newly discovered thing. So they were either being produced to discover treatment for other viruses. A lot of these came about from trying to find ways to cure the flu because of the upper respiratory impact that the flu has. So some of these things are going through some trials and showing some level of efficacy. But like you said, these are brand new, limited distribution. So it's going to be hard to get these upfront and personable. the biggest thing that we really are seeing, that if someone gets sick, especially if you have comorbidities or are high risk for certain blood disease like hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, things of that fashion, is to make sure that if you were not taking something that we call a blood thinner, like an aspirin, that should be the first thing that is started. Depending on severity of care, a large majority of times we're not going straight to using steroids or breathing treatments, because steroids can also cause blood issues per se. Especially if you are like a diabetic, they increase blood sugar, they boost immunity. So they do a lot of things that with the ability for the COVID to cause things to make your blood thicker and make you have more clotting issues. The best thing up front is to have something on board, like a daily 81 milligram aspirin, to help decrease those chances of stroke, heart attack, blood clots. And another thing it's really rest. It's diet, good sleep, things of that fashion until some of those upfront symptoms subside. Now, if they get to a point where you have difficulty breathing or anything like that, then those are initial signs where you need to get into an urgent care or an emergency room so they can gauge anything higher than that and, you know, start providing the necessary treatment.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to ask for a bonus question. If you have taken all of the shots, immunity and boost, all the way up to the booster, should you still be taking the flu shots and all the other shots and x-rays and things, you know, after yes. you've taken it? You still can take all of that.
Yes. It depends on a person's comfort level. Everything's about comfort. There is a lot of debate in the world of how many vaccines you can get at a time. Honestly, you can get as many vaccines as you want to at the same time. There is research that it's fine and safe, but it's also an individual person's choice. If you are somebody who don't like needles, then obviously don't get them all at the same time. If you're somebody who weighs heavily on the utilization of your arms, that might be something where you don't want both arms to be sore at the same time. But, yes, there's a large cases where people have gotten their shingles, their pneumonia, their COVID, and their flu vaccine all at the same time. It is fine to do, especially if you pass the pre-questionnaire of you're not showing a temperature, you're not sick, you feel fine, those type of things, yeah, it's perfectly fine to do. If you do choose to do that, though, I would suggest doing it on a weekend, like a Thursday, so you have time to make sure that you ain't got nothing to do, you are not forced in a predicament where you got to be serviceable or utilize, you know, a lot of that stuff. So you give your body some time to recuperate from it, because you're still giving your body a lot of foreign products for it to start getting, building immunity to, building antibodies and all that fashion. So,
okay. Thank you so much.
Now, on that, mm-hmm. that subject that's come up about taking multiple vaccinations at a time, one of the things that I have shared with patients for their consideration, as Dr. Grice has said, that it is safe to give the multiple vaccinations at the same setting. But for those people who have a tendency to want to attribute any symptom that they have to a reaction, I would say that would be a reason to separate the timing of those vaccinations, so that if you have some reaction, then you can attribute it within a few days of receiving the vaccination to that particular vaccination, rather than not knowing or having any idea which of the vaccines that you received may have presented a problem for you. That, of course, stretches the process out, will require more visits to the healthcare setting, but it at least will help you in your mind feel more comfortable. And I think that goes into the whole issue of people's autonomy and being able to have people that you can have that kind of conversation with. And I think we talked about this earlier, that the healthcare has really moved further and further away from one that is informational, that allows us to participate. And it's difficult sometimes for us to recognize, because people aren't telling us what represents a financial decision rather than one that's based on perhaps the science of it. And I think that a lot of people don't know the answer, and so they lie, you know, make up an answer. And I guess for me, that's been the fun part that I've enjoyed about being a physician and being a patient, because I do hear I hear a lot of lies out there, and I'm able to really say, now, why are you lying to me about this? Just tell me you don't know the answer. And then they somewhat embarrassed behind that. But unfortunately, a lot of that happens. And I try to address it whenever I'm in a particular setting. Hopefully, it will lead to some conversation within that organization, having been challenged in that way, because I recognize the majority of folks aren't necessarily going to recognize when they're being lied to, or when there are financial considerations being presented to you, which really you need to know what's going on. And I think there's a tendency for us to have people make up an answer that they think sounds okay. But I can only look at the adverse events, meaning somebody dying or somebody being seriously sick because of it. And then that is very sad.
I have a question. I may?
Yes, please.
Dr. Grace.
Dr. Grace? Yes.
Dr. Grace. And I apologize for getting tongue-tied, but I was trying to pose my question. And I guess the best way for me to ask this, when it comes to holistic preventive treatments or products or remedies, are there such things out there?
Well, there is a lot of stuff that helps with a lot of stuff. So healthcare is personal. That's step one. It is up to the patient. So that's the first thing that there is. No one knows your body better than you do. That's some reasons why some people are allergic to Tylenol, other people aren't. So if you're allergic to Tylenol, what can I help give you that can help you with pain? Well, depending on something, there might be something out there specifically for you that you can use specifically, like an herb or something else that might not be the norm, but it works for you. There are situations in certain circumstances where individual items, natural, herbal, physical treatment, massage, therapy, aromatherapy, all these things can be beneficial to a patient. The difficulty is all this stuff isn't studied at the same rigor as medications are. So because of the rigorous trials and the time that has to be put into identifying safety parameters, most people prefer to utilize the Western mindset of medicine. That also being said, though, is there's a large majority of side effects that come from a lot of medications. And, I mean, there's a side effect to everything you get. If there wasn't, you wouldn't do the stuff you do. Water side effect is it quenches your thirst. So there is always going to be, if you do something, you're going to get a byproduct from it. So it's always important to identify those things that specifically have solved issues for yourself, and then being very open and honest with your provider to let you know, well, this works and this doesn't. But there is no one thing that's going to cure everything out there for the human body. And sadly, with a large majority of our dietary foods coming from processed places or places that use a lot of extra preservatives, we're ingesting a lot of different things daily just to get our normal nutrition. So there is, like you say, there is nothing, I have nothing against using any form of healthcare that allows you to reach your maximum benefit. But there is nothing else that I can sit up there and say that this one thing or these three things are going to solve the COVID issue overnight. Because, I mean, there really isn't. It's the one thing that you can do is going to take away other health benefits for you. To close yourself in a room and not interact with people anymore doesn't provide you with a standard of quality of living that you want to have either. But that will solve the COVID issue, you know. So there are so many things that impact health that aren't just solely a prescription. And as a pharmacist, I try to really allow people to understand that everything that goes into that you ingest won't always give you a health outcome. Sleep can do that. Something just as amazing as an antibiotic sometimes, depending on what the infection is. A good diet, nice food, healthy food can give you more energy than a caffeine drink can. So it's all about moderation and truly understanding your body and holistically asking questions of your provider and having them as a partner in your care and not the sole source of your care. Because what one person's opinion of you may be might completely forget the fact of who you are, where you come from, what benefits that you might possess, and what specific things that are only impactful to you. So I hope that kind of answers the question. I don't know if it did, but.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, I've heard some things, some things that are out there to help build the immune system and all of that. So I guess I was thinking maybe you would touch base on some things or talk a little bit about the immune system. And then also, I know we're short for time, but I would love to hear more about that protein. Vaccination was a protein one coming out?
Well, I don't know how far it's going to get, but that's usually the way vaccines are made. They can either, so the immune system is super, super phenomenal, super complex, And it's so hard for me to really talk about it without using too big a words, without being able to, you know, go back and really explain what they are. But basically, if you drive in a red car, cops are going to see you, right? Your right. blood cells and your system are all white cars. When a bug gets into that system, either a bacteria or a virus, it's easier to identify bacteria because they are semi-trucks that are red. Viruses are different. Viruses mimic the whites, but once they bind to our cells, they start to show more and more red. Once the red begins to pop on those cells, our immune system can now identify that there's something different about that cell. That's how we can confirm that this cell has the COVID-19 immunization attached to it. So you can either do it by what we do is mRNA, because mRNA is the single-stranded form of our DNA that turns into our DNA, which shows into our cell, or you can do it as a protein base, which is a marker that our body can identify as this to bring it to our cells to identify. Does that make it a little bit easier?
It does. I appreciate it. Thank you.
If you would move us into our closing, we are extremely happy to have Dr. Sir Grice here with us. We are happy to have had our listeners here with us. And Sister Afua, take us out.
Okay. Well, again, we so appreciate you, Dr. James, for creating and putting together this topic, because it's very important and our community surely needs it. We would like to thank our sponsors, WeDocAdvice.com, which provides specific medical answers to those that are seeking to understand their medical conditions and health. Go to www.edocadvice.com, www.edocadvice.com. I think we were very fortunate and we so appreciate it in having this discussion. We would like to thank the listeners for sharing and being with us this evening. Definitely without the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee and their vision and purpose, we would probably be here, but with a different focus, in which our goal is to come with an Afrocentric perspective based on principles that we are learning to share and to live by.
Brothers and sisters, we have been blessed with a new day, smiled upon with another opportunity to better ourselves, to strengthen our families, and support our community. Recite, if you will, in Gunzu Saba, the seven principles. Umoja is unity, and that's the way it should always be. To build and maintain unity in the family, nation, and community. As a people, we need to get together and share our blessings. That's the way it should always be. Umoja is unity. Kujichagulia is self-determination, you see? To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. Kujichagulia is self-determination, you see? I need freedom to define my own goals so no one has to speak for me. Ujima, collective work, and responsibility to build and maintain our community together. Your worries mine, my worries yours, whatever. Let's take responsibility for our past and what our future's gonna be. Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Ujamaa, cooperative economics. That money, man, to build and maintain our own stores, our own shops, our own businesses, getting props, sharing profits, feeling fine. I'll buy your goods, you buy mine. Believing people come before profits do. Power to the people, to the me, to the you. Ujamaa, we must understand that money, man. Nia is purpose, like a little girl's name, to make our collective work the lifting and building of our community so our people can rise to their traditional greatness. We are social beings and we must work together, our hood. But Nia's purpose, so it's all good. Kuumba is creativity, to do always as much as you can in the way that you can. So the community we inherit is more lovely than it began. Enhance the world, a flavor from you, a taste from me. Kuumba is creativity. Imani is faith. To believe in our hearts, in our people, in our parents.